Morning, everybody. You know, as Greg was just sharing that piece about fathers, I was thinking about it during our time of worship too. Some of us, I'm sure we all come from different traditions of church, and you know, when we talk about musical worship, sometimes that looks different. Oftentimes that looks very different from church to church. And you know, the whole idea of raising hands in worship was something that was new to me when I'd grown up in church but had never had a deep, alive relationship with Jesus. And so when I came into that relationship with Jesus when I was 20 years old, I had never really seen kind of the hand-raising type thing. And I remember someone early on that was investing in my life and my walk with the Lord, they said, it's like when you have a little kid. And at that time, we were our son was very small at that time. When your son or daughter runs up to you, and they're reaching out their arms to their dad because they want to be held. That's, for me, that's always been a beautiful image of what raising my hands in worship is about. It's not about, I mean, we're all guilty of it, but it's not about what other people think or what other people are looking at. But it's, for me, it's really been reaching to my dad, my Abba Father, as Greg had just talked about. So anyway, happy Father's Day to everybody, all the guys that are here that are fathers. For those of you that Father's Day is a rough day for you, as Greg said, thankfully we have the best Father, and that is the Lord our God and Savior, and he showed it to us in many different ways. As we get into things this morning, speaking of Father's Day, I have a pin on that says, I'm the boss. This was a gift, one of the gifts from my kids this morning. It was a beautiful card that talked about all the wisdom and authority I have as their dad. And then you open up the card and it says, give this back to mom tomorrow. So it was really sweet, really awesome. All right, so we are in our third week of the study through the book of Daniel. I wanted to show you a couple of books. We're going to be in this, the book of Daniel, for a long time. And so it might benefit you to invest in some other study guides, commentaries, that kind of thing. This is an awesome one. It's called Daniel for You by David Helm. I'm going to quote him a couple times today. I have very little time to read, and I'm not a fast reader at all. So the simpler the book, the better. And it's hardcover, so it makes me feel smarter, but it's very easy to read, okay? So I would suggest, I think we're scheduled to be in Daniel, like, for most of the rest of the year, basically. So, great investment. Our whole preaching theme and titles and everything comes from the way this book is laid out. So, a great investment, Daniel, for you. This was another one, The Gospel According to Daniel, A Christ-Centered Approach. This one's by Brian Chappell. He was actually one of my professors when I was in school several years ago. Great guy. This one's a lot smaller print, sorry, but another great chapter-by-chapter commentary that kind of walks us through. So two great books. I'll quote both of those guys today as we go through this. Here's what I'd like to do as we start. Last week, Greg's really set the stage. We went through verses 1 through 7 of chapter 1. Today, we're going to go through verses 8 through the rest of the chapter, verse 21 at the end. But I want us to think about this because the stage has been set. The theme of our series is faithfulness in an unfaithful culture, okay? So we're going to really dive into that today because now, last week, Greg talked about the fact that Daniel and his posse, we're going to get to their names in a few minutes, but those four guys were part of the Israelites who were brought into slavery, into bondage, into captivity by the nation of Babylon. So they were taken from their homeland, brought into captivity, where, as we'll see at the very end of this chapter, Daniel would be for the rest of his life. He wouldn't see freedom again. Okay? That's really important to understand because for many of us, the culture around us enslaves us in many ways, and we may never see freedom from that this side of heaven. And yet God is faithful, and he is strong, and he's the center of the story, not us, and neither is Daniel. So we're going to talk about that, but what I'd like you to do is take a minute or two and talk to someone around you. Where this week have you been challenged to do the right thing, even when it was easier to not do the right thing? Does that make sense? So hopefully all of us chose to do the right thing even though it was hard. Maybe we didn't. Maybe we failed. But where this week, this past week, were you in a place where you had to make the decision, I know what's right, there's an option to do wrong, maybe no one will even know about it, but I chose right instead, or I screwed up and I chose wrong. So find someone you came with, maybe someone you didn't, but share that for a minute or two. Give some examples to one another. Go to it. That means you gotta talk. Okay, so I overheard one answer, which was I didn't kill my kids. I'm glad you chose to do right. Very good. So I wanted to just, here's some examples I had written down, just listed out. Okay, it's test season for you guys that are in school, whether it's university or elementary or even, you know, middle school, high school. So I know there are ways to cheat on tests. Okay? I'm gonna maybe shock my kids right now. I was one of them in high school. Sorry. I'll hear about that later, I'm sure. Okay? So, did you choose to not cheat or did you cheat? Those of us that work in an office environment, sometimes we have the ability to borrow office supplies for our own use, including making copies, a few paper clips here and there, right? Maybe our boss asks us to cheat the numbers, right? There's a story in this book about a pharmaceutical company where the lady was actually working for a pharmaceutical company, and she knew, as quality control, that they needed to recall some of the drugs that they had put out on the market. And her boss said, no, it's going to cost us too much money. So she was in that place of deciding, do I tell the truth? Do I go to the right people? Do I sign off on the document or not? She chose not to. She chose to do the right thing, to tell the truth, so that the recall could happen and people wouldn't die. It cost her her job. Right? That story ended happily because the competing company picked her up as a new employee because she did the right thing. Let's remember, and we will see over and over again, that doing the right thing doesn't mean it ends with roses and daisies and everything's happy, right? Maybe it's cheating on your timesheet. So you got to skip out a little bit early. You know you're supposed to clock out at 4:30. You leave at 4:10, so you put 4:30 anyway. Maybe it's just being unproductive, not focused, lazy. I have 20-something employees that work for me, and I'll tell you what, that's one of the things that irks me the most, is people kind of cheating the system, not doing the right thing, but they're present, right? But they're not productive or focused on their job. Paying someone, I hear these days, is a good thing to do. Pay someone else to write your term papers. Or preach someone else's sermon, right? I don't know if you've ever heard of that before. Lying to your parents. Maybe it's not doing certain things. So there's widows or shut-ins in your neighborhood, and you have every excuse in the book to not help them out, to not serve them in some way. We're all faced with this issue of righteousness. And as believers, our struggle is that now we know what we should be doing, and so we've got to, we're constantly at odds with that reality. For one of the groups, teams that I have at work, we do a lot of corporate training. And about 4 months ago, we were approached by a department in New York State to come in and do some training this week. So for us, usually that's a great opportunity. This was a little different because it was a department in the Department of Health that's responsible for family planning, Planned Parenthoods, all of those groups are underneath them. Now, we know the content we were being asked to train on, which I believe, even though it's corporate, it doesn't talk about Jesus, it doesn't talk about the gospel, but it is driven by the gospel. I knew there was good we were bringing to the table if we accepted this opportunity. But we were in turmoil because we have these convictions that we don't believe at all in what they do. So we were trying to decide, do we accept this contract, do we not accept it? What are the pros, what are the cons? What do we do? And there's these messy situations that there's, if we had said no, we would have been right. If we had said no, we probably could have been wrong too. If we said yes, there would be right to it, and there's wrong to it maybe too. So we had to really wrestle with our hearts as Christians. Where did we stand? What did this opportunity mean to us? At the end of the day, we ended up accepting the contract, and I'll tell you what, we got to speak in front of 120 policymakers from across New York State who make policy related to their department, and we got to go in, and without saying the name of Jesus or opening our Bibles or anything, for 2 hours we got to train on what we believe is truth. What is righteousness? What does it mean? Now, we weren't going in direct conflict with what they do. We weren't standing up there and saying, you guys are heathens, you're all going to hell. We equipped them with tools that they didn't have before. And maybe, just maybe, God might do something with that. Now we're going to look at Daniel, who had the opportunity to turn and run, to be defiant, or to step into a faithless culture and bring some faith. And so I think that's what we're often challenged to do, to not turn and run, but to engage and do some good in the midst of it all. So turn to Daniel chapter 1. We're going to read verses 8 through 21, and then we're going to unpack it. I've been threatened by my children to stay short, so we'll see where we go. Verse 8, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chiefs of the eunuchs, and the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear, my lord the king, who assigned your food and your drink, for why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king.'" So this eunuch is in charge of David and his friends, okay? Remember, David and his friends, they're in captivity, they're in slavery, and this eunuch, this leader, chief of the eunuchs, is in charge of them, and they're supposed to feed these slaves a certain menu of foods. And Daniel doesn't want to eat those foods, and we'll go into why in a second. But as Daniel said, no, we don't want to eat it, the eunuch comes back and says, but I'm going to get killed if you don't do what I tell you to do. Interesting that David had enough respect with this eunuch that he was able to have a conversation with him and not fight him or just be told what to do. Verse 11, "Then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, 'Test your servants for 10 days.'" So this is Daniel's response, his counter proposal. "Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see." So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. So David, based on his convictions, puts into this situation his faith. He puts his faith in God on the line by saying, try it out, watch what God does. Okay? Verse 15, at the end of the 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave, a recurring theme, that those two words, circle it, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chiefs of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. All right. Verse 8. Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself. And then later in verse 9 it says, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion. Daniel chose to live by his convictions. You can't have godly convictions if you're not in a relationship with God. Because if you try that, your fakeness, is that a word? Is going to come through at some point. Your convictions have to be birthed out of a relationship with God, and we're going to talk about that at the end also. But Daniel had these convictions. He resolved to not be defiled. And I'm sure there's very, very nice theological definitions of defiled, but here's mine. You're made nasty. Okay? So whatever that might look like in your work context, in your family, in your neighborhood, with your clubs or teams that you're a part of, you have a choice to be defiled by that environment or resolve to live pure in the midst of that environment. Brian Chappell in this book says, how much do we make Christianity credible to a society that wants nothing to do with the faith of our fathers? How much do we make Christianity credible? Okay, and that's what Daniel was bringing into the Babylonian environment. He was saying, I'm going to do everything possible to live by my convictions, but bring God and make him credible to them, for them to witness and see how good and faithful he can be. Daniel's concern, let's go to the food issue in verse 8. This is the very practical conviction that Daniel stood on. He resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. So what's up with this food? Okay, it was either really nasty or maybe it was too good to be true and he thought maybe he'd become gluttonous. The fact is we don't really know. Maybe it was the kind of food. Remember, Daniel and his friends come from a Jewish background, right? And there were certain laws about the kind of food they could and could not eat. So maybe, I don't know, maybe King Nebuchadnezzar was laying out like pork chops every night and bacon for breakfast, and it was the kind of food that they knew would go against their convictions and the laws that they were raised in. Maybe it was the kind of food. Maybe it was the use of the food, right? In the Babylonian Empire, there was a lot of idol worship, and a lot of the idol worship was done with food. Right? So they would sacrifice animals and they would lay it at the altar of these created gods that they had. And maybe it was that food that was being offered to him. So it could have been the kind, it could have been how the food was used, or it could have been just the fact that when you share a meal with somebody, you're fellowshipping, you're in agreement together, you're doing life with one another. And maybe because it was the king's food and they were coming to the king's table, by them taking that food, it would defile who they were and how they could stand apart. We don't know for sure. Could be any one of those. Maybe it was something else. At the end of the day, what I love in this situation is that Daniel had a conversation with the eunuch. He didn't just stand up to the eunuch and say, no, we shall not. and then walk away, right? First of all, he probably would have been killed. But number two, he had the courage built out of his faith in God to say, to engage in a conversation where questions were shared, concerns were shared, and listening happened. Here's what we like to do in our Christian culture. No, we don't agree with that. It goes against my convictions. We turn around and walk away. Or we plant our sign in the lawn, and we say, you're going to hell, I'm not, and we step away. I can't touch you, evil people. Problem is, that's not what Jesus did, right? It's not what God the Father did when he sent his Son into the world. It's not what Daniel showed us by being in captivity and living in captivity, not just existing in it, right? So Daniel had this conversation. He showed respect. He asked questions, right? I wonder if we ask enough questions or if we're quick to judge. So here's the deal. Out of these first few verses, we learn, and Greg has talked about it the last couple weeks too, Daniel has almost been idolized in our Christian culture, right? From early on, if you've grown up in church, kids are taught the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're thrown into the furnace, and then there's somebody there with them, and they survive, and all these great and glorious stories about Daniel. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do over these next several months is really point to the fact that Daniel points us to Jesus. That we have to understand, we've got to get past how can I be like Daniel and how can I learn from Daniel to more faithfully follow Jesus, right? But there's some really amazing things we can learn from Daniel. We got to remember, first of all, that they were in captivity. They were exiles. They were in a foreign land as slaves. And David Helm in this book talks about this idea. We can't underestimate the strength of character and faith it took to make this decision and how precarious his position was. So for Daniel to take this stand and say, I can't eat this food or drink this wine. I need you to hear me. And he had the willingness and courage to hear the eunuch. And together they came to this proposal. Just give me 10 days to prove how awesome my God is. Right? In many circumstances, that would have cost him his life then and there. It would have been over. But God's grace is amazing. Right? God's power is there in the midst of this situation. So what got Daniel to this point? That's the question I've been wrestling with. How could this young guy who's been stripped out of his culture, his family, the world he knows, he's put into the king's court in captivity, what made him who he was? So you go back, turn to 2 Kings. Keep your finger in Daniel. 2 Kings, it's right after 1 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 20, no, chapter 22. We're introduced to, I think, one of the coolest characters in the Old Testament. And we're introduced to him here in 2 Kings chapter 22. He's the new king, King Josiah. And what's interesting about him, first of all, it says in chapter 22, verse 1, Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. Okay? Raise your hand if you're older than 8 years old. All right. A few years, right? 8 years old, this guy comes into being king of Israel. Right? And you go on and you find, as you read chapters 22 and 23, this young guy grew into a strong leader who was faithful to God. It says in verse 2, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and walked in all the way of David his father, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left. We see a lot of stories about the kings of Israel and Judah throughout Kings and Chronicles. Very few of them stayed faithful to the Lord through their entire reign as king. Josiah was one of them. right? At the very end of chapter 23, you read about how he dies, and it says that he was faithful to the end. Okay? Now, that's Josiah. Daniel and his friends were born into that kingdom. And likely, because they were from an elite family, they were likely raised in the midst of King Josiah and his inner cabinet and family. And these young guys, starting with Daniel, got to witness a lifetime of faithfulness by a leader that they grew to respect and love. And then, after Josiah died, they were ripped out of that environment and placed into King Nebuchadnezzar's courts in a foreign land in captivity. To be a Daniel, to live with the same kinds of convictions, it doesn't just happen. Daniels are made. Very fitting thing to talk about on Father's Day. People are of resolve, are fashioned, they are made. They don't drop out of the sky. They are developed, discipled, and disciplined over years. And I believe that Daniel was developed, discipled, and disciplined over time. And that prepared him for God to choose him to be taken into captivity for the rest of his life. Because in that place, he was ready for all of that had been invested into him to bear fruit. First Thessalonians. If you want to flip there, you can. Otherwise, I'll just read it. This is Paul talking to the Thessalonian church. And Paul's, any of the churches that Paul was writing to, we read or we studied through a lot of the churches that John was writing to in Revelation. But all of these churches were growing up under the Roman Empire. And as we learned over that series, it wasn't a fun empire to be in if you weren't true to the emperor and Rome, right? Like, it included death, decapitation, hanging on a cross upside down, those kinds of things, right? And so Paul's writing to the Thessalonian church, and he says in chapter 3, verses 7-10, he says, "For this reason, brothers, in all our distress and affliction, we have been comforted about you through your faith. For now we live if you are standing fast in the Lord. For what thanksgiving can we return to God for you? For all the joy that we feel for your sake before our God, as we pray most earnestly night and day that we may see you face to face and supply what is lacking in your faith. For now we live if you are standing fast in the Lord." You know the great thing about studying Daniel and the environment he was in, the kind of man he was, is that it should encourage and strengthen and grow our faith in the culture we're in. The culture we live in today, unless you live in some holy Christian bubble somewhere, is very much like this Babylonian culture. There's so much against us and what we believe and the convictions we should be carrying into our lives day in and day out that sometimes makes it overwhelming. And we need to be able to study a guy like Daniel and say he was made into someone who could stand on those convictions. I can be made into someone who can stand in those convictions. You know, when we stood in front of that group of New York State workers earlier this week, to be honest, I mean, we prayed a lot going into this training, but I had no fear. And I'll tell you what, that had to be God. And then the conversations we had after the training with individuals, my prayer has been, can God take that seed that was planted and do something miraculous and supernatural in those individuals' lives? And then maybe even at a systems level across our state. I don't know. Is God big enough to do it? Absolutely. But were we faithful to speak and train in a way that was honest and true? I believe so. And then we just got to leave the rest to God. That's what Daniel had to do. He didn't have a strategy or a system set in place of how he was going to transform Nebuchadnezzar's life and the Babylonian culture, and everybody would bow their knees before God. He needed to be faithful in the little things, in the moments, like what he was going to eat and what he wasn't going to eat. and God would do the rest. And we're going to read about that over the next several weeks. The other point I want to make here, because it does give us inroads, is the second half of this part that we've read, 17 through 21. And it goes into this idea that God gave these guys learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Again, our courage comes from our relationship with God. If we are personally, intimately in a relationship with God, He's going to give us courage in the midst of this culture. And then from that, we also have to know that the only thing I study is not just the Bible. Okay? This is the source of everything I do, but if I don't pick up and read a few books, if I'm not reading the newspaper, if I'm not studying the business that I'm about to go present to, I'm not going to be prepared. I'm going to be illegitimate in some ways. We can't be afraid of the wisdom that's out in the world. It's amazing, a couple hundred years ago, that many of the leading universities in our country were founded on Christian principles. And as those universities have gone far from Christian principles, now we suddenly look at them and say, we can't be there. We can't engage there. They're speaking blasphemy, or they're not standing on truth. Then why would we as Christians not want to be there? Who else is going to be there? If people are not... Here's an example. Can I have a couple volunteers? Can I have you guys come up? Can I have you come up, Christy? Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb your sleep. Can you guys stand right there? Okay, just right there. No closer. Okay. So I'm having a conversation with Christy, and she shares with me that, I don't know, her parents are struggling, and it looks like it might lead to a divorce. And I hear that. I'm not saying that. Hopefully they're not going to listen to this. Okay. So I hear that, and this is what I do. Let me run over to my church buddies. Hi, these are my church buddies. We really need to pray about this situation, and we need to create new programs in our church to better prepare us to deal with these situations, and then we need to talk more about it and probably raise some money to invest in it. And yet Christy's over there by herself with that situation she's still dealing with. Do we need this? Absolutely. But my first response should not be to run away from the pain and the struggle, but to engage it, talk with her, listen, and then slowly begin to plant the seeds of God's power and healing and life. And at the same time, guess what? Now I can bring my crew into the situation with me. But isn't our default, and it's unfortunate, our default, and this is a very simple subject, whether, let's think of things like the bigger things around our culture, like abortion and putting up fences around our country, those kinds of things. Instead of engaging in them here, we run into our huddles and talk about all kinds of ways to protect ourselves from it, or tell everyone else they're wrong. Thanks, guys. You can have a seat. See, worldly wisdom helps us understand, just like it did with Daniel and his three friends, that the more I know about the culture, the better I'm prepared to engage the gospel into that culture. My prayer has been for our city in particular and our community here, that we are known by this messy gospel at work, not all the right answers, we fail in the process, disciples are made kind of culture, rather than there's the rest of culture and there's Christians. And we're safe on Sundays, and if we're involved in Christian school or a Christian business or whatever it might be, then we're safe over here and we're good. I wonder what the eunuch, what his journey must have been like. Because we read that they were healthy, right? which led to them having the favor to be able to speak into the king's life. I wonder what he must have been like. Man, I got this figured out. I showed the king. I know the right choices to make. Or was he like, wow, this God they claim to serve just did something awesome. I love what Paul says in Romans chapter 8. Again, another church he's writing to in the midst of a depraved, broken, lost, hurting culture. And he says these famous words in verses 37 through 39. No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. I can just imagine Daniel standing in his room, or as we're going to read in the next couple weeks, bowing in his room to pray, saying, God, it's painful. I know my life is on the line, but when I see you face to face, I've conquered. No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. God gives us the power and the grace and the love to engage the places we are so that his life flows through, so that his truth becomes real. These men would not compromise with the world, who would not compromise with the world, ended up being most useful to the world. So we go on and read. So they learn all this stuff. They're skilled in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel has understanding in all the dreams. And then it goes on, if you skip down to verses 19 and 20, and the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. Now, I'm pretty sure that these guys were just naturally smart, that they were gifted. God had given them certain gifts from an early age. But then there's just the amazing things God does through simple, pure, faithful motives. I've met some people, one guy in particular who owns a business, a very successful business in the capital region, who his life has been marked by faithfulness to the Lord, commitment to the local church, and growing a very successful business serving many employees and customers across the region. Day in and day out, 40 plus years he's been working in this business. Now, I also know I was at his father's funeral late last year, and he was made over time because his father was the same way. He was investing in his son who would eventually take over the business. And listen, this guy will never stand up and speak in front of people like this. He's just not gifted that way. He's actually the CFO who handles all the accounting and payroll and that kind of stuff, which makes me want to poke my eyeballs out. Okay? But he does it faithfully, day in and day out. Successfully building a business while serving people in work, at his church, in his family. And then I've also known guys, one guy who was a strong believer, and his job was a maintenance man at a school. And his convictions led him to serve in that position. Listen, he was never going to be an accountant at some big company. He didn't have the mental capacity to do those types of things, but the dude cleaned floors. He interacted with students and teachers, and for 40, 50 years worked in that job in a way that was faithful to the Lord, engaging culture, not running away from it. I don't care where you are in life, whether you're a student, you're retired, or anything in between, God has called us and wants to empower us to be in the culture while not being of it. We can learn about it. We can have this wisdom about the people we serve and the people we work with and the people we need to learn from. But at the end of the day, this is what drives who we are. It's what drove Daniel. Here's the key, though, is that only when you have submitted are you strengthened to stand. Think about that for a minute. Only when you are submitted are you strengthened to stand. God calls us to stand in a culture that is broken and lost and desperate for the king that we know. But you can only serve a king if you're going to bow to him first. And so our lives have to constantly be submitted to, bowed before, humbled before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And then from that, as maybe I study some new techniques in work or a new business document, or I'm reading the Bible day in and day out, all of that then becomes the strength, and the Holy Spirit is putting it all together. He's weaving this beautiful courage to stand. And that doesn't mean you have to stand in front of everybody and tell them how lost they are and broken they are. Guess what? People know that. And oftentimes, all they need is for someone to listen to that brokenness, and then from that, you have the ability to weave in the gospel and the truth. The simple message, this is Brian Chappelle, he says in his book, the simple message is that our holiness serves as a witness to those near us, our neighbors, our family, our co-workers. By our faithfulness to God in hard situations, we are participating in the proclamation of the Lord's gracious nature. I love how he puts that. By our faithfulness in this culture, by Daniel's faithfulness in his culture, we are participating in proclaiming that we are not God, he is. There's an answer to the pain and to the brokenness and to all the troubles that are in this world, and we're not the answer. Jesus is. One of the greatest examples for me has been my parents. I was born, I think, 2 years after they finally gave their lives over to Christ. They were both grew up in Christian homes, but as young adults needed a real life encounter with Jesus. And so just 2 years before I was born, I'm the oldest child, they came to a real living relationship with Christ, got plugged into a strong church, a small group around them, and then proceeded to live those early days as new believers, new married couple, new parents, through all kinds of crises in their lives, and struggles and pain. And so I've watched over the last, closing in on 40 years of my life, watched my parents be faithful in the midst of a lot of hard stuff personally, and a very difficult, difficult culture in which they've lived. Because they lived here with me, in this world. But their faithfulness, not perfectness, their faithfulness in the midst of it all, over time has been a witness to me, to my wife, to my kids, and to many other people, that it is about God, not about them. That they can sacrifice not because of good intentions from their own heart, but because Christ first sacrificed for them. They can learn about the things of this world and then understand how the gospel addresses every single broken promise that the world offers to us. And so, although I was rebellious, I made a lot of mistakes, I delayed choosing to follow Christ for half of my life, I remember that night when I finally submitted and bowed my knee before God and said, I can't do this anymore. And I went back to my room that night and I wrote a letter to my parents and I just thanked them for the constant, consistent investment of God's truth into my life. Like Daniel, we need to be faithful in the midst of our captivity. That last verse at the end of chapter 1 says that he was there until the king of Cyrus, which means, as we'll see historically, he was there forever. For his whole life. He didn't get to go back. We're not going to be rescued and put on some holy mountain somewhere for the next 20 years of our life because we're faithful right now, guess what? Our freedom from captivity is heaven. So whether you die tomorrow or 40 years from now or 80 years from now, guess what? You're in captivity. We're in a culture. So our faithfulness in the midst of this culture, this captivity, is greater than arriving at our destination. It's greater than gaining our freedom. So the challenge as we study through Daniel is not how do I get away from this culture, but how do I make myself fully invested in this culture, available for God to use me? Making Jesus famous in the midst of it all, being faithful to Him through it all. So I know Greg's been posting some questions as we go through the week on Facebook and stuff. Just a couple of questions to think about as we continue moving forward through Daniel. Has there been a time when your conscience has urged you to follow a particularly difficult path? Has there been a time when your conscience, your convictions, has pointed you towards a particularly difficult path? Has there been a time, or will there be a time, are you in the midst of that decision-making process where God's saying, I want you to take this step of faith based on my relationship with you and the truth of my word, but it's going to be hard. Secondly, I think one thing we've learned as we talked about King Josiah, what part are you playing in training the next generation? So if you're a senior in this congregation, you're elderly, you've been around many generations, my prayer is that you don't look at our culture today with disgust at how broken and messed up it is, but as an opportunity to say, I have a few years, moments left in this world to fully invest what God has done in me into a younger generation that can continue to live through this captivity in a way that points people to Jesus. Is your aim to raise children to decide to be Daniels? And then lastly, when we talk about being godly and useful, does it encourage you, or does it scare you? If it encourages you, then lean into Jesus even more. If it scares you, then lean into Jesus even more. He has to be the center of our attention in all of this. Otherwise, it's me trying to, in my own wisdom, make change happen, and it's not going to work. Let's pray.